our next speaker, and Missy Klein, particularly familiar to all of us who were involved in the 1964 Goldwater effort. And his name is forever connected with that first stage of revolution. He's the present director of the John M. Ashbrook Center for Public Affairs, Ashland College in Ohio. He taught as a young man in the public schools, and also at Cornell, and at Ithaca College thereafter. He was, for a time, the director of the Public Affairs Counselors Incorporated, and as the president of that, and wife and associates. He, his best known good, I think, so in print in recent years. And one of my most recent trips to Washington, his co-author of a recent book, gave me a copy. He's also forever connected to the history of the Republican Party, not just with the Goldwater campaign in 64, but went all the way back to the late 40s. And he is a senior consultant to the, has been a senior consultant to the Reagan-Bush President Committee, and has spent some time in government service as a member of the U.S. Information Agency inspection team, as a member of the Commission on Intergovernmental Relations, member of the transition team in 1980, we overlapped at that point, and as chairman of the Presidential Commission on Broadcasting to Cuba, a lively subject in radio marketing. Wright is by origin a New Yorker. He has written You Should Be a Politician, Suite 3505, The Story of the Draft Goldwater Movement, and Why Reagan Won. Now we will hear why his opinions are by Reagan Won again. That's why.
Beginning in the 1930s on down to the present, and the essentially in the post-World War II era, is we were going through a period where, in terms of popular impression and popular political ideas, not just because of the media, but to a considerable extent because of academia, we went through a period of time in which liberalism was the thing. First, you couldn't find many conservatives, and if you did, they tended to hide it. If you wanted to get ahead academically, if you wanted to get ahead politically, if you wanted to get ahead certainly in the fields of journalism and profession, you wanted to be labeled a liberal. We even have some very distinguished public officials, in my opinion today, who got trapped by labeling themselves as liberal, who really have better instincts than that and want to be conservative. And maybe we can get them to come out of the closet for the rest of this decade somewhere and admit they're conservative. So we had that particular atmosphere coming to a considerable degree out of the Roosevelt and the acceptance that government was going to solve all our problems. This did two things. It left us defensive, and Bill has suggested this. We were always defending. We were defending or apologizing. And if you want to look back at our so-called great conservative leaders of the decades of the 50s and early 60s, you'll find that they fall in that category. I have the greatest respect and admiration for Senator Taft, Senator Dirksen, but if you want to look at some of the basic legislation that deals with our institutions in this country and government interference, you'll find their names associated, usually in a compromise manner, with some of that legislation. So here we ended, here we were living in this period of time in which we tended to be on the defensive. Secondly, during this period of time, and I'm talking primarily now from the end of World War II up until 1964, a period of time in which, honestly and legitimately, there were in both parties good, dedicated, practicing conservatives. In both parties. The Democratic Party had its strong turnout. It had Harry Bush. You couldn't find better conservatives who stood up for principles. This made it more difficult for a general public to make a decision in terms of the political process as to how they were going to perform and behave in the arena of politics. How did what party did they belong to? What party did represent them? And frequently the answer to that question could be determined upon the basis of where you lived rather than upon the identification with a particular political party. So this is kind of the circumstances, it seems to me, that go into our yesterday. Now, to try to get us up more to today and then to look at tomorrow, let me suggest two things that I think are true and relevant in regard to the politics for the rest of this century and hopefully for the politics into the next century. Number one, the Republican Party is the conservative instrument in American politics today. We established that in 1964. That's what that campaign was all about. Unfortunately, it took a large percentage of the Republican Party another 20 years to realize what had happened to them. They didn't believe they were conservative. They didn't know they had the conservative strength. So we finally achieved that and documented it with the nomination. But not that Bill and I didn't try in 1968 to speed the process up with the nomination of Ronald Reagan in 68, but we missed. So we had to wait for Ronald Reagan's nomination in 1980. His election then, which then, as Bill has already suggested, was generally attributed to either a big mistake or his personal charisma or an anti-Carter or something else. So we had to go through again to 1984, but two things about 1984 that clearly ought to tell you that this is where the Republican Party is of conservatives. One is Ronald Reagan's re-election. And remember, the election of the President of the United States is the only national referenda in this country. Every other election is in some way or another contaminated by provincialism, either a state or a local issues of some kind or another. You vote for the presidency, and that's the only place in this country where you vote on a national basis. Therefore, don't try to suggest all kinds of things not being true as a national mandate. Ronald Reagan got a national mandate, and I certainly believe after all the years Ronald Reagan run around this country, two presidential campaigns and 4 years as president, that the American people don't know who he is, and what he stands for, and that's exactly what they were voting for. They Americans, that we like Ronald Reagan, what he is and what he stands for. And that's what the book was all about, I think, in 1984. So we get that. Now, the other side of the coin, which is equally important as we try to look at the practical aspects of politics in 1984 and beyond, is the Democratic Party. One of the reasons, in my judgment, that poor old Fritz Mondale looked so bad throughout this whole 4 years that he was running, is Fritz was trying to represent a coalition that doesn't exist. And it gets a little tricky, and you're bound to look a little bit like a wimp when what you're standing for isn't there. There is no labor union power today in American politics. There are no big city bosses. The solid South hasn't been solid in presidential elections since 1952. So the coalition, my point is, the coalition is gone. They've had, the last two times, as Bill pointed out, they went back to what they thought was representative of that coalition. Hubert Humphrey, Fritz Mondale, and the rest. So the role of what's going to happen in politics in your tomorrow, and it is your tomorrow, is this. I think the Republican Party has found its soul, and it is conservative. I think it is going to be very important that we keep it there. It requires some tending in regard to programs, and it requires tending even more in regard to candidates, which I want to say one very quick word. But it is there that you have your instrument for conservatism in the United States. You are fortunate in that the Democratic Party has got to find its soul. And it is going to spend the next 4 years, if not more than that, trying to determine what it is, where it's going to go, and who's going to dominate. And that started the day before election. I thought Jesse Jackson was absolutely magnificent. The day before and the day of election, he was on saying that his Rainbow Coalition was going to deliver. Now, if the rest of the people will deliver like my coalition, he said on every television station, if the rest of them deliver, we'll win. So what did he say the day after election? They didn't. I did, but they didn't. Now, Lane Kirkland doesn't agree with him. And thinks around. But those are the kind of battles that you're going to find taking place in the Democratic Party, and therefore, I think, an opportunity for the Republican Party. Let me say just two quick things. Bill talked about the Congress. Most of what he said was absolutely correct. I really do believe that gerrymandering is much more critical than we had realized. I was way off in terms of my predictions as to what was going to happen in the congressional race. I said all you could get between 20 and 30 seats, and I didn't see how we could miss that. We did miss it. We missed it because of gerrymandering. Now, the exit polls, which are dangerous things to believe, but the exit polls indicate that this time, 50% of the people said they voted for a Republican for Congress on the basis of the exit poll. Now, again, I say don't believe those, but I think it is an indication that we were going to be that we did get more votes for Congress. At the state legislative branch level, we did make gains. We made significant gains. And again, the problem that Bill mentioned is really demonstrable at the state level in Texas. We picked up 10 seats in Kansas in Texas in the state legislature. We had 16 legislative districts in Kansas, in Texas. I don't know what I want to make it Kansas. 16 districts where we did not contest a Democrat running for the state legislature. No contest at all. We didn't run anybody. Had we, almost everybody thinks we probably could have picked those up. Two things that I think are important from the point of view of conservatives in this direction, we are going to do them. First, we're going to go to work on the state legislatures. We're going after them on coalitions. There are conceivably as many as 10 states where we can get conservative control in the next year by careful, judicious coalition building timed with Democrats. We're going after switches. We're going to try to get those Democrats who belong in the conservative party in the United States to become Republicans and get into that and do that particular job. The last point I want to make, because as with Bill, I would like to leave time for some questions, and I really, you people can do a great deal about this. I think one of the most serious problems facing the United States today and facing elective politics today in the United States is candidates. Finding good, competent, able people who will run for public office, who will serve in public office. They are so beat over the head by the media that people today are turning it down. We've got people retiring from public office today just because they weren't put up with it. Well, if we retire, we leave these vacancies out there. If we aren't willing to serve, you're going to get at least second rate, if not third rate, maybe a few bums, scattered throughout your whole area of public officials. But I think the recruitment, the selection of candidates is great. The last point I would make to that third generation in here, and I've made it to some groups in the last 2 weeks, if you believe in this, if you know what you believe in, you think the way to accomplish it is through politics, go take over in your area. Don't sit around, don't go ask any old political party leader to give you a start and let you in. You believe in it, get him. Kick him out. Go beat him. I tell you, if you go after him, and if you beat him, you are the party and the person in power. If you don't beat him, each one of you will have enough respect for each other to do business together that will make it practical and realistic. Thank you.
For Mr. Rusher, since he has to leave soon, I'll take those questions first. Back here, please. Identify yourself, please.
Yeah, I'm Danny Boggs from the Energy Department. This is really a comment on Mr. Rusher's point about the Louisiana situation, but it also ties in with what Mr. White said about the congressional races. Louisiana has a peculiar situation where they have an open primary in September, and anyone who gets more than 50% of the votes at that time is automatically elected, which is why all of the people, both Republican and Democrat, were listed as uncontested. They had had whatever contest they had had in September, although many of those were uncontested. Mr. White is right that 50% of the people in the votes that have been counted also, as well as the exit polls, voted Republican. That doesn't count some 50 seats, 40 Democrats and 10 Republicans that went uncontested. When those get counted in, the Democrats will come in with a percent or two higher. But I think you're entirely right that if we contest those 40 seats, maybe not the first time or the second time, we'll start winning something. Because 20 years ago, we had 100 seats in the South that went uncontested. Now many of those are held by Republicans.
Nothing I can add to that?